Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 46. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Scott Johnson.
And we are once again journeying into the future with a couple of special guests to help us along the way. Joining us this week are Mare Swallow from Swallow Consulting. She's the host of the Etiquette Bitch podcast as well. Welcome, Mare.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you along. I'm very excited to get to do a podcast. We met at the Podcasters Across Borders Conference in Canada and had a great time mixing it with a bunch of podcasters. So this is...
And flying home.
Yes, and it saved me from my hangover on the flight home.
It saved me from boredom on the ride home, so thank you.
Chris Christensen is also with us, host of the Amateur Traveler podcast. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how are you, Tom?
I'm well. Do you predict you'll have a good time on today's show?
Yes, that will be the first of my predictions.
All right, well, there's one out of the way.
Do I only get three questions now?
Yeah, I'm sorry, you've used one. You know what, we'll grant you a bonus one, since we like you so much. All right, let's get to the predictions from listeners. We got one. It's a longish one. Ed Torigny wrote in and said, some of the comments on the Whale Wars podcast, that's last week's episode, got me thinking about what could happen as we transition to paperless books. Without a hard copy book of record, it will be possible to edit a work and change the intended message of the author. Imagine searching the future web library and finding two versions of the same book, both written in the style of the author, and both very much the same story, but with subtle differences that make the two stories opposite in meaning. Picture of Grapes of Wrath that makes the unions look evil and places the blame for the Dust Bowl on the farmers for poor farming practices. Or an Atlas Shrugged that makes John Galt out to be the cause for the suffering of the masses. Literature at the level of Fahrenheit 451 or It Can't Happen Here has had a profound effect on our culture, but editing of the original for social manipulation or political gain will become difficult to stop if there is no true printed original master copy to reference.
Tom, what is the difference between what he's saying and what we already have in the form of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies? To me, that is already this thing he's talking about. It is in the style of what's her name, whose name just escaped my brain. But it's Austin, told in Jane a way, Austin. Jane Austen, thank you. It's told in a way that is completely different in sort of tone and meaning. And ultimately, it's a very different reading experience, yet it's meant to be taking from her work and mashing it up with something else and creating something wholly different, you know, from the sum of those parts. It seems like we're already there to me.
I disagree because, for one thing, being in a digital form, if I changed a single word in a blog post, you could probably figure out which word I changed. I mean, there is this record
kind of forensically.
Yeah. And so I think actually it gets harder to change because how many people actually know Jane Austen by memory? Well, okay, that may be a bad example, but
right.
So I think it actually gets more easy to track.
So if that's the case, and I agree with you, The clandestine type of this thing, I guess, would be weird, and I could see that being a problem. But it's already happening intentionally and knowingly and ironically. People are already sort of taking these things and making mashups of them. And to me, I think it's an interesting thing, and it seems like it's a very unique to our time sort of thing. But it doesn't. I don't worry about people sneaking in and saying, all right, I'm going to change all this and no one's going to know, because you're right. People will be able to figure that out. That's not hard.
But the thing that's a little odd is I don't think people realize that for a lot of the books we have now, there are already multiple versions. We had the Harry Potter book, for instance, the first or the second book was the English version. The English version is not word for word the same as the American version.
Well, the title is even different.
The title is even different.
The Philosopher's Stone versus the Sorcerer's Stone, right?
Right.
Well, and also Pride and Prejudice and Zombies is called Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. It's not like it's called Pride and Prejudice and there just happens to be a bunch of zombies in there, and they, you know, and you're when you buy it, you think you're buying the original version.
Yeah, good point. Any thoughts?
I think what the listener who wrote in is saying versus what's going on today, it's quite a bit different, because you look at things like subtle changes, like in the title of the Harry Potter or the Pride and Prejudice and Zombie. For me to put out a printed version of what is my mashup of Pride and Prejudice or The Unbearable Lightness of Being or whatever, that takes a lot more effort than if I have digital access and I can just do something digitally. Not so much what Chris is talking about, like changing someone's blog, but I think when we have easier access, it's going to be a lot easier to change that stuff. So I kind of agree with the listener in that, you know, there's got to be a printed copy somewhere. And you know what? I bet it will be that there always will be some printed matter somewhere because of one thing: lawsuits.
You'll need to have a record to prove, like, on this date, I printed this copy, and this is what it said.
Yeah.
Yeah, but laws change over time. It used to be, for instance, as the fax machine first came out, you couldn't use a fax as a legal document in Germany. And then it got to the point where, oh, no, you can use a fax, but you can't use an email. I mean, so things change over time. So I think there could be a copy of record without it being a printed copy.
But I also know that at least right now in some courts, you can't, if you're showing photos to prove whatever, they can't be digital photos, that you have to show that they were printed from film. I don't think that's true across the board. If you watch People's Court, you know, there's digital copies all the time. But I think you're probably right that at some point digital something will be accepted, but I think it's not going to be as fast as we think it is.
Well, it's faster in some areas than in others. I mean, film is one of those things that you can't even buy film some places anymore. So that's one that is going to change faster than printed books, for sure.
There is a way to sort of secure the versioning of something. You can create an MD5 hash that you can make a checksum and say, okay, this is that version and nothing else. And if it doesn't match up, then you know that something has been changed. So there are ways in digital without locking things down and necessarily using digital rights management to authenticate the version of something. And I think that could come into play. I think there's a lot of positive aspects of this too. I mean, the idea of an author being able to go and constantly upgrade and manipulate and change the story over time could be considered a positive, where you can come back to a work 15 years later and see what has been changed, what has been improved upon. Because any author will tell you, when they're writing a story, when they get to the publishing point, they get to the publishing point because they're just sort of got to get it out, not because they're done with the story. They're always constantly changing things. So, you know, the idea of a wiki story where you could even have collaborative authors, you know, changing it over time is pretty cool. And then you could go back and see earlier versions and find out how the story evolved as people were working on it.
You could also, because it'll be so digital, you could do that in real time. So you could not only, you know, you'd be able to flip on a mode that would say, all right, well, this entire paragraph is new since version 5. Show me version 4 or show me version 3 and do it all in real time. And other forms of media are already doing this. When somebody puts out a popular video game engine, I don't know, let's say Half-Life 2, they make it extremely moddable. And what happens then is they say, all right, well, here's this thing we worked so hard to bring you, and here's the regular game for it. But then there's also this underlying infrastructure that we're going to give you all the keys to be able to do whatever you want with it, and let's see what you do. And amazing work has come out of that method of letting people mash things up and create their own work and sort of take what you've done and take it further. The games are a great example of that. I think that other forms of media online have shown that that's possible. Why the crap not books? I say books should go down this road. It'd be great.
And don't forget, Star Wars has already shown you can constantly change your story. And you can change the order people shoot in and have men turn into big giant slugs, and all kinds of stuff can be changed over time. Send us your predictions. If you've got one, forecastpodcast@gmail.com, or just post them up at our blog, forecastpodcast.com. It is time to get into the meat of this show. Short-term predictions. These are predictions of what we think will happen in the next few years. Could be in your area of expertise. Doesn't need to be. Just something near term. Whatever you think. Let's start with you, Mayor. What's your short-term prediction?
Rockin'. Well, I'm kind of focusing on professional development and jobs in the future, since that's kind of what I help people with. Well, it's not kind of, it is. But I think a lot of what's going on today, the conventional wisdom around social media and Facebook and crap that you put online as it applies to getting jobs, I think that's all going to be turned on its head in 10 years or less. So, for instance, right now, and you've probably all heard about this or read this or seen some letters in Dear Abby, but right now, if you put searchable photos on Facebook of yourself doing a beer bong, or you put some embarrassing video on YouTube and you're looking for a job and you're interviewing with a corporation, they're about to make you the offer, and the HR person Googles you and finds this really embarrassing stuff, or they think you're doing something inappropriate, right now, the case is that you're probably not going to get the job. And I know people who actually have lost job offers because of this. I think within the next 10 years, all that's going to be opposite. That if you go to apply for a job and the HR or powers that be can't find something out about you online, maybe personal, maybe embarrassing, maybe not, but if you're not revealing a little something about yourself online, I think that's going to prevent you from not getting the job. That's going to prevent you from getting the job.
Right.
it's going to hinder you the way drinking and dancing photos are kind of hindering young kids today. But I think that's going to change very quickly.
Sort of like, well, wait, what does this person have to hide since I'm not finding the normal things that I would find? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, that's... When I first thought about it, I wasn't thinking, what does this person have to hide? I think what I kind of envision is that social media and the use of the internet and putting out photos and cutesy videos, I think that's going to become so accepted that if you're not doing that, it is going to be kind of like, well, what's wrong with you? And don't you have the skills that we need?
I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson. We were going to give you the job, but we couldn't find any beer pong pictures.
Well, switch the camera to me since I'm Mr. Johnson. But I like this idea because it seems to me that for my kids, okay, I've got a 16-year-old, and she is way into Facebook and way into, going to that dance with her friends and getting a bunch of pictures and throwing them on Facebook the next day. And she's, form spring questions with her friends, and all this kind of stuff comes up. And I have wondered at times, okay, well, what does that stuff translate to in 10 years when she's 26 and she's trying to get a new job and they're looking at this record? And since this is sort of, that's pretty near term, a decade away from now, and it's an important part of life, what impact will that have on her? And honestly, I don't know the answer, but I like the idea that we will have evolved as a society of technology that we can look at those things and say, okay, that video she did at age 16, A, was when she was 16, and B, it was funny, and C, it showed leadership, or whatever they see in these things.
Sure.
Hope that's what happens. Now, I say that hoping and at least semi-knowing that she hasn't done anything crazy stupid on the internet.
Look at her skill on that beer bong.
Right. Right. So when you're talking about stuff like that, as a parent, I go, whoa, dude, that's not going to help you in the future. But I hope that somehow, if something like that does happen, that you're right, and it somehow in a weird reality does help her somehow. Mm-hmm. Although, if she's listening, don't do the beer bong on video. Or at all, that'd be fine, too. But
there
anyway,
was a columnist from the New York Times who did they were hiring a nanny, I think it was, and he went out and he did the search on Facebook and various things and found that like three of the candidates, one had the picture of them getting drunk, and the other one, though, had, I'm just doing this until I find the real job and then I'll quit this in a heartbeat, so some of it isn't just, what is your behavior? Some of it is, are you revealing things about yourself that you don't want to reveal to a potential employer? Some of those things I don't think change. I've been doing social media now, building online communities since 96. Well, actually, since before the internet communities, back in 92. And my rule for social media is that most things really aren't the difference. If you remember that it's a real person on the other end of social media, a lot of the same mores apply.
They do, but I think a lot of people are forgetting that.
Absolutely.
And I think when it comes to using the internet, cell phones, texting, whatever, people are still stupid.
Been since 92.
Or have been since the beginning of time, with everything. But, okay, here's an example. I guess to kind of like modify what I'm saying or build upon it, yeah, employers are going to want to see the stupid on the internet, but it better not be about them. I have a client right now, a large media company, who they brought in a candidate. The guy interviewed, great interview. They were ready to extend the job offer, but he blogged about his interview with them. And I mean, he said positive things, but they didn't like that he was writing about them before the interview. He might have said a few iffy things, but they rescinded the job offer the same day.
I feel like that's the kind of thing that will change in the future. Yeah. Idea that you said something in public at all, even if it's non-controversial, we're not comfortable. I think that goes away. I think, you know, the generation that is growing up with the internet the way it is right now is going to feel like everything is mostly public. And they're going to understand that when they judge other people. They're going to say, oh, well, yeah, of course you would put that online. I've done the same thing. I'm not going to have this weird, like, well, it's okay if you get drunk, but I don't want to know about it sort of opinion. Right. It's sort of like, hey, yeah, people do that. They do crazy stuff. They write crazy things when they're young. We're all going to get used to that and accept that. But I think Chris has a good point, too, which is there are certain things that won't change. And if you say them or do them, whether it's in public, private, or otherwise, they're going to work against you because, you know, certain things are going to change. But I think this sort of hypocrisy of like, well, that really isn't a problem, but the fact that you made it made it public is a problem, and that's what we don't like. I think that starts to go away.
No, I've definitely seen that changing over the last few years. In 98, we did a series of chats with Mattel around collector Barbies, and they had the designers on. It was great events, but in the first events, they had 24 lawyers in the room trying to decide how to respond to things. I mean, they just weren't ready for that kind of openness, and that's the kind of thing that's changing and changing very rapidly.
All right, let's move over to you, Mr. Christensen. What is your near-term prediction, your short-term prediction?
My short-term prediction, and this is completely outside of any expertise that I would have, is 10 to 15 years from now, in a VA hospital, we're going to see the first probably Gulf War vet, Gulf War II, regrow a limb that was lost. It's going to take a long time. It's going to be painful.
Wow.
He's probably going to be a sergeant, and I would guess Hispanic.
A Hispanic sergeant from a war will regrow a limb.
Because we're already seeing that kind of research coming out of the stem cell sort of things. And I think they'll start to put it together kind of in that time.
Yeah, they've done a lot of research with lizards that can regenerate and figuring out what makes them able to regrow a limb and we can't. Yeah. I mean, that sounds funny to say, but it's true.
Right.
Chris, I'm curious, how is this going to happen? Meaning that they're going to do something with the stem cells and
basically
into the guy's limb and
what happens basically is as they've learned now to start to get cells to revert to being stem cells, right? So all cells start sort of undifferentiated, and they're basically get cues from where they are in the body, different enzymes that trigger what they should become. And so if you take a toe from a chicken and you put it on the arm, it ends up still a type of, you know, finger phalange thing out there, but it ends up a toe on the wing sort of thing. So that as they start to figure that out, if they can get some of the cells at the end of what is now a stump to undifferentiate, then they could get them potentially to regrow. And my guess is at first it would take, 9 months or something like that. It wouldn't be like the Bacta tank in Star Wars or something like that, but...
The science fiction fan in me was just picturing a random Hispanic sergeant suddenly growing an arm and everyone freaking out and it becoming a big government cover-up. And I couldn't get that version of this out of my head this entire time. But I really like
Sergeant Zapata? There has never been a Sergeant Zapata.
Right. I mean, you can see this guy escaping and kind of... it's kind of a District 9 vibe I'm getting, just kind of...
Yeah, I didn't say it was going to be a human limb. Yes, that's really left open to the reader, but at that point.
This technology is getting better and better, and prosthetics are getting cooler and cooler. So
yeah, it's an interesting race, actually.
I wonder which side is going to get the most funding, attention, interest.
What I was thinking.
Which one are you throwing your money at? The prosthetic side, which is getting really advanced, or this other side, which is still kind of holy grail, but maybe they're making some progress.
Well, and what I'm wondering, I don't know if this is where you were going, Scott, or what you're thinking of, but stem cells are still so controversial, and you get the pro-lifers or Christians or whoever who say, oh, you can't do anything with them, it's life, blah, blah, blah. I just wonder if that's not going to get in the way.
Well, we're seeing less of that as they're getting stem cells from other things which are not aborted fetuses. I mean, that's really where the bulk of the controversy was coming from with stem cells. It wasn't stem cells per se. It was
fetal stem cells. It wasn't even aborted fetuses.
Right.
But just
right.
Fetal,
right.
Fetal stem cells.
People who are like either completely for it or completely against it without knowing, you know, what's the full story, where it came from, yada, yada, yada. So I think you're absolutely onto something, but I still see such wacko fanaticism in this country that even if you explain, hey, you know, this research could help with whatever, cancer, or helping regrow limbs, that some people just aren't for it and they're so rabid about it. I just don't ever see that going away in this country, or at least not in the next 10 to 15 years. And that troubles me.
So you're thinking that's why they will have to do away with Sergeant Zapata.
I think there's going to be a cover-up of Sergeant Zapata.
I think that this is one of those things that I notice in the chat room, a lot of people are like, well, cybernetics, yes, but this kind of thing, no. And the fact of the matter is, even though we've made a lot more progress with prosthetics than we have with regeneration, regeneration is perfectly possible. Even, right. You know, and cybernetics in the way that you're, you know, thinking in the sci-fi, like it works just like a hand, is still very far away. I mean, we've made great advances and we can actually do, you know, thumb and forefinger stuff now. But adding in touch sensitivity is just now being tested. It's not perfected. It, right. And it's not going to replicate all of the things you can do. There was this story about a double hand transplant the other day, which is pretty amazing. It's quite possible that even without fetal stem cells, even with other kinds of stem cell research, that we'd be able to develop this ability to regrow limbs. And then the question becomes, like Chris is saying, it's a race. Which do you pick? If you had the choice, they're like, hey, we have this great cybernetic arm. It works right in with your nerves. You can feel things. It's just like having a real arm, except, you know, got a little more strength, got a little more durability in there. Or we can just regrow your arm. Which would you like, sir?
Well, see, the big advantage of the natural arm is that when you bend it and make the muscle, it doesn't make that boop, 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 boop kind of noises. That really is a disadvantage.
The TiVo noise?
The bionic woman noise.
And you don't have to run in slow motion. That's the other disadvantage. Big disadvantage with the cybernetics. Yeah,
I'm all for all this kind of this stuff. But it just seems to me that the hard part, and maybe Tom, you already said this, and I'll just say it in a different way. But if we're reaching for better cybernetics, that is a world where we have to recreate the incredible complexities and amazing things that nature has in the form of a real hand.
So that we don't completely understand, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. And then on the other hand, I'm sorry, that was not a
pun intended.
Did not intend that. But on the other side of it, you've got this regrowth, which is just us figuring out how to trigger it to do this naturally incredibly complex thing that it will do anyway if we can just trigger it. And so if you're asking me, I go regrowth every time.
Old growth arms. We'll have a meeting in the future.
The good question was, does Sergeant Zapata have his disability benefits stopped when his limb regrows? Yes.
Well, unless there's some sort of maintenance that has to go with a regrown limb. But yeah, you lose most of the other stuff. You don't need a wheelchair anymore. We grew you two good new legs. You're fine. Get out there and get a job, Zapata. Stop leeching off the government, for God's sakes.
You guys keep beating up on poor Sergeant Zapata, and all he's doing is fighting for our country.
And he lost limbs in the process.
He lost limbs, yeah, the poor guy.
We thank Sergeant Zapata for his service, his hypothetical future service. let's move on to our long-term predictions. These are the more sci-fi, strange, turn-your-world-upside-down predictions. If you have to have a year limit put it on, like 100-plus years, but there's really no limit. It just has to be farther off in the future than your near-term. And, Chris, we'll stick with you. What's your long-term prediction?
My long-term prediction is we will invent teleportation, but it won't work with living matter.
Only stuff.
And the reason for that is that we'll be able to capture a picture of where all the atoms are, but we won't get the motion. And so when everything comes out at the other end, none of the atoms will be moving. It'll be flash frozen at absolute zero. And life won't survive it.
Gotcha. Unless
it's a Heisenberg thing.
Unless we have some sort of weird absolute zero life. But
normal things that we
humans,
recognize as life.
No, no teleportation for humans.
Maybe viruses.
So it's great for moving. Because you just hop on the plane and then you have all your stuff teleported. But it's bad. You can't move your food. You can't move your pets. Can't move yourself. Right. You know, that seems pretty likely.
Here's what I want to know. Will it work with dead matter? So let's say you've got a dead cat.
Why do you have a dead cat, Mare?
That's a very specific question.
I don't know why I'd want to transport my dead cat. Maybe. Okay. Here's a potentially realistic
situation. Maybe it's Schrodinger's cat.
Possibly. Yeah. I'm thinking, I live in Chicago, and the cremation place where you have to send them is in Evanston.
Okay.
And you're 7 miles away. I don't want to drive my dead cat over there. Can I teleport him?
As long as you don't mind them ending up very cold for a little bit, yeah, it would work fine.
Cool.
That's really... Okay, so it wouldn't destroy organic matter.
No.
But it would just freeze it, so right. It would kill anything. So you could send your food, as long as it's food that could handle being frozen. Your frozen food. All your frozen dinners you could teleport.
Is it the movement that's the issue? Because I'm thinking, what if you have like a really, really, really rare steak? Won't that cause problems?
Well, it would be like freezing a steak. You could freeze it, you know.
Although, no, I think you're right, Tom, because I asked about the dead cat, and what's a steak other than a dead cow? So
dead
I think
piece
we're
of
good.
Cow,
hopefully
yeah.
your steak is not a dead cat. If that's the case, you're going
now
to the
we
wrong
know
restaurant.
Has so many dead cats. Because she's selling them on the black market as steaks.
That's
true.
Right.
To a different restaurant.
This seems perfectly reasonable that we would get teleportation, but they would not be able to sustain living life, whether it's the absolute zero thing or not, actually. I mean, there's so many intricacies to keeping something alive
right.
that are well beyond just putting all the atoms back together in the same orientation. You've left us all speechless, obviously.
Rats, I believe that is not the purpose of this show.
I just want to transport my dead cats and my steak, and I'm happy. So as long as that's the case, yay. And interestingly enough, I will be dead by the time this comes around. So
we'll put you wherever we want you.
We'll teleport you right into your cemetery of choice.
With my dead cats.
Yeah, they're buried next to your 100 dead cats.
We should have a list of the weirdest things people have said on the show, and I think teleporting my dead cat should... The top five, probably.
All right, let's move over to you, Mare. What's your long-term prediction, your sci-fi, turn your world upside down sort of thing?
You know, I had my little chat with Tony. It's not terribly sci-fi, but it is a change.
Okay.
Okay, I'll tell you my prediction. If you don't like it, I'll throw a sci-fi aspect into it.
No, it doesn't have to be sci-fi. It just has to be long-term. It can be anything.
It is. It's really long-term.
Just make the last word aliens. Whatever it is,
okay.
How about this? You all are familiar with the nice, positive thinking self-help movement, like the Tony Robbins of the world, right?
Right, right. Deepak Chopra is coming to the Marin Civic Center shortly.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
Ah, decide if you want to be a prisoner of your past or a pioneer of your future.
I think because the Marin Civic Center usually has like Def Leppard and the Rolling Stones, and I think Deepak Chopra has become the heritage rocker of positive thinking. But I digress.
I love it. Okay, so here's the thing: the Deepak Chopra aliens and the Tony Robbins aliens of the future will no longer exist. They're all going to be out of business, and here's why. I seriously think that any of this positive thinking, not that, you know, positive thinking is ever going to go away, but I think the industry that came out of that and these people who are millionaires because of it, that's no longer going to exist, because I think within 100 years, at least in the U.S. society, we're going to realize that, no, you can't be anything you want to be. Just by thinking good thoughts around something, it ain't going to happen. And just because you plan and do what all these positive thinking books tell you to do, doesn't mean it's necessarily going to happen, but also I think our society is going to come to accept that it's not realistic. I think, well, and then my next prediction will kind of piggyback off this, but I think it's going to be more accepted, known, and understood that this isn't the way, and it's not real, and I think people are just going to be a lot more gloomier. And there are not going to be Debbie Fords pushing books and selling out seminars where they just push BS to people to tell them that they can be whatever they want to be. I think that whole industry is going to go away.
You mean I'm not a precious snowflake?
Oh, Scott, you are a precious snowflake. And you'll be dead by the time this happens anyway.
Here's what I think. I think that it's... that is a interesting look at what the future could hold. But I think people... We as a human body tend to just eat up stuff that makes us feel better. So if we're dealing with a rotten day, and at the end of that day, we see, we help an old lady across the street, we get some joy out of that. Or if we see something happen that's sort of inspirational on TV, we get sort of a weird jolt out of that. It makes us feel better about our lives or about the lives of people around us. And mm-hmm. I don't think that goes away. There's got to be some source for that. And for some people, religion plays that role in their life. For other people, Tony Robbins plays that role. For other people, mm-hmm. just constant vacations play that role. But whatever it is that people need to feel like there's optimism in the future, that they can, there's greener pastures ahead, they got to have something, right?
I think that's somewhat cultural, though. I mean, she's just saying that maybe our culture will change. I mean, the joke used to be that the Russian saying was, life is hard, but it's short. You know, it's a very different view of the world. And it's possible that the U.S. view of the world would change over time if things, mm-hmm. if we're no longer the top dog, if we're no longer, you know, everything's coming up roses and two chickens in every pot and every generation does better than its previous generation. Sure. It could change our overall psyche.
I think what I was driving at, and I, you know, definitely good stuff in what you're both saying, but that because of the way this is going to change, a big chunk of the self-help industry is going to go away, and you're not mm-hmm. going to be able to make money anymore off of telling people to, you know, think positive and plan to have a better job. I think that whole segment is going to be gone. Tony Robbins, there's not going to be another, you know, Tony Robbins Jr. in 100 years. There's not going to be a Debbie Ford. Yeah, I think practical advice will always have a stage. Like the, who's that financial woman? Susie Orman. Love her or hate her. Her stuff is practical. Sorry, we chatted about this before.
People are going to change. Like we have become cynical to say advertising as a good example. So in the 40s, something comes on into a movie theater, or in the 50s on TV, and we see it and we go, oh yeah, I do want those cigarettes. Oh, I do want that thing they're trying to sell me. Ovaltine sounds amazing. It's going to change my life. And you look at that stuff now and you go, my gosh, they were just feeding people crap. Like it was just a bunch of lies. And now I see a commercial and I just go, okay, whatever. And unless it's something I'm really interested in, that's very specific to my sort of want and need categories, I just kind of blow it off. So I can kind of see that happening where mm-hmm. just nobody believes it anymore. Guy with bright white teeth and a suit exactly. is no longer going to hold all the answers because he's saying this stuff for years and years and years. And if it was all so easy, we'd all be doing it and nobody is. So we become kind of jaded. Is that kind of what you mean?
It's a little bit of that, but also I think in our culture, we're getting a more heightened consciousness that just because we hear, and even if we believe the nice shiny message and we do everything that the books tell us to, or the Tony Robbins seminar tells us to, it doesn't necessarily transform your life simply because the way the world is, you know, there cannot be 1,000 Madonnas or Lady Gagas or Justin Biebers or Stephen Hawking's. It's just, there's just not room for all that. So I think, yeah, kind of like what you said about the old advertising message, we're going to realize that, oh, it is a phony promise and people aren't going to buy it anymore.
Every little girl can't grow up to be president.
Exactly.
It's tough to picture. Not all of them. Yeah. It's tough to picture. It's a fairly radical change in our cultural psyche.
I don't know, though. I think Scott laid out a good template for how this could come about, which is, and Mayor, I'd have to say that you still have a self-help industry. It's just not the same one. So instead of having mm-hmm. the people who come out like Robert Schuller and Tony Robbins and say, all you have to do is change the way you think and you can do anything and be anything, you have mm-hmm. what we have today with commercials. Commercials are more self-aware. They're aware that Scott is sitting there going, commercial, I don't know. And so they come up with some clever way of making their product appeal to him. And they use psychology and they poke fun at themselves for being advertising. And maybe mm-hmm. that's where self-help goes as well, which is as that attitude changes, the self-help industry changes along with it and say, yeah, we all know we can't all be president, but here's how you get what you want. And I feel like some of the things like do what you love and the money will follow and what color is your parachute right. are the kind of things that could still exist in that self-help scenario because they're less about you can do anything than about mm-hmm. find out what is actually right for you to do. And it becomes more reasonable that way.
The FTC guidelines recently with blogging that say basically you have to give average results. if those are applied to all things, we'll have a fairly big change at that point. You know, your weight loss commercial has to say most of you won't lose any weight, but still get off the couch. You
know? Right.
Right.
You definitely won't lose any weight if you stay on the couch.
So maybe that's what will happen. There will still be Tony Robbins or whoever is his incarnation in 100 years. There will still be seminars and Debbie Ford and these little things where they all get together in a hotel meeting room. But maybe there's going to be a law that they have to preface this with. 90% of you aren't going to change a damn thing about your lives. You're still going to have your 2.5 kids in your crappy house in the suburbs, and you're going to be married to your nag of a wife. But, you know, feel good for this weekend. I do think it's going to change, though. And I do think a large segment of people who push positivity messages are, they won't be in business in 100 years.
Yeah, I think that it'll have to be positivity with a caveat, and not just an enforced caveat, but just the idea of like, hey, we know just thinking positive isn't going to make magic happen, but here's how you can tailor your life to fit you better. And honestly, that could end up being a better thing for people. Hey, we know life is, you know, hard, and the only thing good about it is it's short. But here's how to make the most of your hard, short life.
Vodka.
Lots of borscht and vodka. And Tolstoy. All right, let's move on to the crazy-ass predictions. 10,000 years in the future. Something you think has got a very small chance, but you think it still is going to happen. And we'll stick with you, Mayor. What's your doozy of a prediction?
Oh, my doozy is that... In the United States, in the long, long, long way off, you are not going to have a say in what job you have. I think between fifth and eighth grade, it's going to be determined what you are good at. If you're really good at math, even though you love to sing along with Glee or whatever version of Glee is around then, you're going to be an actuary. It's going to be predetermined for you. It's going to be very much like communist countries in the 60s and 70s. You're good at something, it's determined. And a lot of the jobs we have now, used to have, are going to be completely gone. So that's why your destiny and your job are going to be predetermined for you. And you get what you get, whether you like it or not.
I'm glad I'm not an alpha. I'm glad I'm a gamma. I wouldn't want to be an alpha.
Yeah. Sounds like Gattaca a little bit, you know, where that was more based on genetics and stuff and, you know, being perfect to get those jobs. It's interesting. If you've got skill sets that come to you naturally or you've got talent, you'd be funneled into that thing that best suits you, but not always the thing you would want to do, I guess.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I see it going, you know, kind of like, I don't know why this phrase popped into my head, how you can best serve your country or best serve all of us.
And you know what? I think I see how this would happen in the United States differently than it would happen in communist countries. And so instead of it being government controlled, right? That's what everybody's jumping to the conclusion in the chat room. They're like, wait, that sounds like Russia. That's communism. I don't think it happens that way in the U.S. I think what happens is we develop these, you know, these tests and psychological profiles and hiring mechanisms, similar to what you were talking about earlier, of looking on social networks and finding out more about people. And there's so much data about who you are that companies can actually determine between fifth and eighth grade whether you're suitable for them or not. And so it won't be a government controlled thing. It's just, you know, you'll take a few standardized tests, you'll send your results to certain corporations, they'll send back a note whether you're acceptable or not and for what jobs, and then your job is determined right then.
I think we're heading in the opposite direction. I think that my father's generation, that would be a different leap. But what I see is a conversation between four people who are spending a lot of time doing things that weren't even available when they were in high school. You know, we're getting such new careers and such new opportunities, and increasingly with different generations, I'm seeing people who want to form their own career and be their own entrepreneur. So I actually think we're heading completely in the opposite direction. I think we're heading a direction away from big business being where a large percentage of people work, and more towards people being independent creators of their own career,
which is basically what four of us here are kind of doing. I mean, in various ways and pieces and parts. But
no way, man! I work for the man.
Name's
Leo,
and that's true. And I think
great example of that. You know, he totally pulled it off.
Sorry, I keep jumping in. I'm sorry. No, it's just I agree. Four of us. I mean, probably none of us thought we'd be doing what we're doing when we were in high school. And I think we're four incredibly lucky people. I definitely feel that way about my life. I have a really cool life, but and maybe I'm the cynical one in the room or online. And yeah, I kind of see my prediction as being slightly communistic. But what I see happening right now, the United States is so stuck. We're resting on our own laurels. We think because we've been number one for so long, we're always going to be number one. And unfortunately, that's not the case. There are countries that, like China right now, and probably other countries we haven't thought of yet, that are just going to kick our butt in so many areas. So that's why I think that, yeah, your job's going to be predetermined, because I don't think we're going to have the abundance and the opportunities and the ability to, you know, create our own things the way we do now. And again, this is a long, long, long way off in the future.
What about the singularity, though? We're all going to be, you know, living forever. No, won't use any resources. So we could be whatever we want.
Because we don't use resources?
You, Tom, are a precious snowflake.
There is no other like me. All right. Shall we move over to Chris for the crazy ass prediction? Chris, you got something suitably crazy for us?
Well, I hope so. We will, in fact, encounter aliens, as all the sci-fi authors have been predicting for so long. We won't, in fact, be able to meet them. We will find ourselves contained in this rock or this solar system by sort of relativistic effects. And so we will only meet them through their signals at first. And for 25 years, it will only be the best soap opera on TV, because we won't understand a darn thing that they're saying. It'll take years before we even understand what they're talking about, but eventually we will form a long distance courtship, basically.
So, and the it would be like a cosmic IM conversation between people who speak two
with
different languages.
Really bad delay.
Yeah. Over dial up.
And for 25 years, it'll just be the best thing on TV, and it will in fact cause the end of the soap opera industry.
How will we understand it?
We won't see. We won't have the context at first. Even if you could figure out the words, it just won't make any sense.
But you'll watch it.
But you'll watch it. Oh, absolutely. You'll watch it. Yeah.
It'll be like a train wreck. You can't look away.
That's right.
Well, yeah, because everybody's going to want to know, like, what's the next message? I think this will work.
It finally gets solved by a housewife in Iowa with a lot of time on her hands, as it turns out.
In the Translating at Home project?
That's right. Translating at Home project.
I think this works for the first few messages, but as was witnessed by the Apollo missions, landing on the moon, huge hit first time, pretty big the second time. Third time, nobody paid attention until everything went horribly wrong. And after that, it just became mundane. Like, oh, yeah, we're landing on the moon again. You know, they didn't even televise it anymore.
Yeah, but it's still better than Springer. See, that's the thing. That's why it'll be daytime
TV.
It won't be nighttime TV.
Here's where I start to take Mare's out of it.
But it'll, you know, just daytime, it'll take over.
I don't know.
I you know what? I'm going to refer to some more game theory here, because in video game theory, we have the Apollo problem, where if you just give them the same challenge and the same levels over and over and over again, and many games do, people get tired and they move on, and the initial spark is gone. They're not interested anymore. It's kind of like eating the same food over and over. Eventually, you need some variety. And Springer provides variety, where this other thing, once accomplished, once someone's met the challenge, becomes, well, okay, well, what's next? What's the next big thing? Nobody cares about Numa Noob Kid anymore. Everybody cares about lady throwing a cat in the garbage can. You
right,
know what
but
I mean?
You're like, picturing one signal. Imagine if it's a whole culture's enemy, a whole alien culture's signals.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. But it's still, it seems like even then, that's colossal and huge. But even then, when you get to the other side of it, you'll just kind of go, eh, what else is on? I don't know.
Yeah, we still haven't figured that out. Nah, I'm bored.
Well, yeah, but it's the lower cost of broadcasting that really gets the TV stations on board, because they don't really care what kind of Vaynerchuk they pump out, as long as they can make a profit on it. See, so
yeah,
somebody else providing the signals for free. You know, it turns out on the other end they'll be selling our signals for free.
The internet has ruined the advertising economy for them by then, so they'll be looking for cheap programming.
Exactly.
All right.
And signals will be cheap programming.
Yeah, absolutely.
Signals that we have to figure out. Ooh, what if they're like the game show of the future? Because do you notice game shows aren't on anymore? Well, you're lucky if you get to see Jeopardy.
Yeah, it'd be like watching Japanese game shows. I never understand them either. It's just,
and that's what it'll turn out to be. The aliens were just merely sending us game show questions.
Exactly.
That stuff's cyclical anyway.
I like it.
Like the Japanese game show of craze happened, kind of went away, happened again, kind of went away. It'll come back again.
Never went away in Japan.
Yeah, but like How to Be a Millionaire or whatever the hell that was called. What was that called?
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Some self-help Tony Robbins.
No, it's still on. And they've got like their third or fourth host.
Right.
But it's syndicated. And,
but my point is nobody gives a crap right now. But when it was huge for that little period of time, I mean, it was, you know, the greatest True. Time in the world for, I forgot the host. What's his name? That guy.
Regis Philbin?
Well, yeah. Regis Philbin. You forgot that Mara is saying that in the future the show is going to be changed to "You're never going to be a millionaire."
Exactly. But you can watch and feel good and get your positive ego strokes because and go back to your naggy wife.
Since fifth grade, you were determined to be an actuary. You will never become a millionaire, but we know you will make specifically $700,000 during the course of your life. Those are the revalued dollars from the currency reform of 2072.
That was when they lopped off the three zeros.
Time for four questions. This is the segment where we hit each of our guests rapid fire style with four questions about the future. They are not allowed to stop and think, but rather tap into the communal energy of the space-time continuum and give us, if not a more accurate answer, at least an entertaining one. Shall we start with you, Mr. Christensen?
Certainly.
All right, I'm going to ask these questions. Are you sitting comfortably in the Twit Cottage right now as I speak?
No, but the ointment is helping.
Good. Here we go. I'll start with this first one. If you could time travel, what time and place would you pick?
Ancient Rome, just because of great love of history and so many things we don't know, even though it's a culture very similar to us. Just listening to a podcast about the history of Rome, and they're like, yeah, we don't really know what happened here, and just love to be an observer.
Wrong. Correct answer was the future. The show's called Forecast.
Yes, but the future is the time travel device.
Gotcha. I got you. All right.
Nice.
So you never know if you travel forward whether you go too far, and if you go too far, you're gone.
Right. Or it just starts repeating itself, Nietzsche style.
There you go.
This time is farce.
That's how I like my sushi, Nietzsche style. All right, next one. What artificial meat do you prefer in a pinch?
Synthetic ostrich.
All right, that is the correct answer.
In a Bernays sauce.
What will be our main energy source in the year 4000?
A synthetic ostrich.
Can we ride them, I guess? That's maybe. Then lastly...
Well, it's not good for eating, so really at some point...
That's a good point. A little chewy. Last question. More possible, teleportation or automated hover cars?
Well, we've already talked about it. It depends on your definition of teleportation. If you want to be teleported, I'm going to have to go with hover cars.
But what if not? What if it's just teleportation at all?
Automated hover cars.
Still automated hover cars. So the question is moot. Automated hover cars. I win the automated hover car.
Congratulations, you win, Tom.
All right.
I win, Tom.
Congratulations.
I'll be going.
Was that the prize or the movie prize?
I'll be accompanying you home. Second prize is two Toms. Let's move over to Mayor Swallow. Are you ready, Mayor? Are you sitting comfortably?
I am.
Good. Then we'll begin. Will we get to a point where the 40-hour week is a quaint thing of the past, and why?
Dear God, yes, because 15-hour weeks are going to be the norm.
15? Ah, it's so long still. I was hoping for the Tim Ferriss 4, but
don't even get me started.
All right, question number 2: Will a robot ever become president, and of what?
Yes, of the National Federation of Robots.
Of course, it will, because they would not pick a human.
You can't be in the NFA, NFR, if you're a human.
No, they have like a liaison, but that's as close as you can get.
Well, there's the ambassador because, they need the humans to do their event planning and get the hotel rooms. But, other than that, no.
Those are outsourced positions. Awesome. Question number 3. Once we've evolved beyond the need for physical bodies, will etiquette be a lot simpler?
Ooh, no. It's going to be more complicated.
And why?
Because there's no bodies.
Okay. So without the bodies, you won't get body language? Is that the idea?
Well, yes, and there's going to be so many other question marks. If I show up at Tom's house 15 minutes before the party and his wife is actually, his wife's disembodied body, which isn't a body, is still showering, how do I know?
Right.
What apologies do I make? Do I leave and go to the Starbucks for non-bodied people for 15 minutes, or do I hang out and make awkward chit-chat with my weird signals with Tom?
Yeah. No, you're really right. That's incredibly complicated. I hadn't even thought about it.
Which fork do I use to eat my salad that I can't eat because I don't exist?
Exactly.
Which hand do I manifest to pick up the fork since I don't actually
have it? Is it rude to not touch the fork since I don't have a body? Do I make apologies, or do I just act like I'm supposed to be doing this?
Right, right. No fun. Question number four, which comes first, the singularity or the apocalypse?
Ooh, the singularity.
Well, thank goodness. We're saved.
Yeah. But you're going to say the apocalarity, which I don't know what even that would be.
The apocalarity.
I like that better, actually. Yeah. The apocalarity.
The apocalarity is the funniest apocalypse ever. Oh, apocalarity. It's so funny it kills you. Yep. It's the joke that really kills.
Oh, my gosh.
The single joke. The one joke.
All right. Very well done, Mara Swallow. Thank you very much. And sadly, that is the end of our show. I wish we had more show. This was really fun, you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Chris, before we go, though, tell people where they can find all the stuff that you do on the internet. Every link.
Well, you can generally find things at...
We'll just sit back while you...
AmateurTraveler.com or links from there.
AmateurTraveler.com. Amateur Traveler, a fantastic podcast.
Barcelona episode is particularly good, I'm told.
Yeah, there's some factual inaccuracies in it. But it's a great way to get supplemental information to your guidebook from people who've actually been to these places. Mm-hmm. And like you... are just going to these places. They're not paid to go to these places.
Well, sometimes it is actually the guidebook author who's on the show.
Well, okay. Yes. Granted. But what I like is it's people who are, speaking from their personal experience.
Right.
And, Mayor, let people know where they can find what you do.
Sure. Professionally, I'm at swallowconsulting.com. And if you want to hear some fun etiquette-related podcasts, they are still up at etiquettebitch.blogspot.com.
Excellent. Scott Johnson, another successful forecast.
I know. I don't even know what to do with myself. This was an amazing episode. It really was, actually. Very thoughtful stuff. I can't wait for another episode, which happens every Monday. A reminder to folks that if you're hearing this in the audio feed, come join us live every Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific time. And this is where we talk to some great guests about some awesome futurist stuff. And hopefully one of these days someone will prove us wrong and a future will happen that was not predicted on this show.
I noticed that Sergeant Zapata showed up in the chat room.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Our thoughts and prayers are with you.
I think we may have disturbed the timeline by letting him know to protect his limbs in the future. All right, folks, don't forget to leave your comments at our website, forecastpodcast.com, or you can email us, forecastpodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.
See ya.
Music.
Music.
Only 32 years away.
We'll fix that in post.
You always fix it in post.
Tom, Scott, do I have to send you thank you cards for being on the show?
No, yes. No. You're released.
We were going to ask you that, actually.
Yes, you should send one to Scott, or he will think you're rude, but not
no,
me.
No. No one need thank us. We have need to thank you because you guys were great. All our guests were just so great. We just love having you guys on.